You're listening to the Talk of Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew. I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
And today's episode is our part two of our winter 2020 anime season reviews. We're finally done with it all. We wrapped it up. Unless we decide later that we want to go back to some certain shows. There's still that Dogokobo show that I never got to, unfortunately. But yeah. Today's episode we have Keep Your Hands Off Izuken, Magia Record, Puella Manjai Madoka Magica, Welcome to Demon School, Aramakun, Inspectre, or Inspector, I must keep saying Inspector. Nekopara, 22-7, Show by Rock, Mashu Mai Reshu, Pet, Isekai Quartet 2, Room Camp, Plunderer. I'm going to basically talk about the first core of it because it's still going on. And then we'll do some review discussion of My Hero Academia Season 4 because we're at the point now where you don't really need reviews of show that's going that long. But yeah, I think pretty much like 90% of these shows have new seasons already announced for them. So this is like the podcast review of shows that you should probably jump on now rather than wait until they have another season.
Really? Kind.
Yeah. Except for the first one, which is Keep Your Hands Off Izuken. That one did not get a confirmed second season yet. So yet. We'll see. I don't know. But yes, this is Keep Your Hands Off of Izuken or Izuken Ni wa te wo dasuna, and this one streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Science Saru. The source is a manga, and the genres are adventure, comedy, school, and seinen. And the director is Masaki Yuasa, who of course did Devilman Crybaby, Ping Pong the Animation, The Tatami Galaxy, and Night is Short Walk-On Girl. So kind of a well-known director that I never did really get into. But this one follows Midori and her, I guess, friend Sayaka, who is always kind of looking after her. And eventually a girl they meet at their school, Tsubame, who is a model. And essentially it kind of opens up with Midori being kind of drawing stuff, storyboards, basically inspirations, different kind of concept arts that she's kind of brainstorming. She seems to have a very creative imagination that likes to kind of create things out of, you know, mundane things. And Sayaka is kind of always trying to push her to kind of use those things in order to make money, because Sayaka seems to have a thing about making money on everything. So as they bring in Tsubame, who they run into, who's being chased by some, they call men in black, like these guys in suits that are trying to, they're basically hired by their parents to, you know, protect her. They find out that Tsubame is, you know, the daughter of a, you know, very well-known, I think they were directors or something like that, somebody in the movie industry. And Tsubame has a really desire to kind of do animation, so does Midori, and Sayaka is kind of just trying to push them in order to do what they need to do, in order to make some kind of buck from it. And so they form a, I guess you would call it a animation club, but they don't really want to call it an animation club because there's already an anime club and there's already a film club, and they're trying to be able to get a club established in order to make animation for, you know, because they enjoy it. And so it kind of follows them as they build up the club, make animation, discover some old animation equipment from the school, start making films, doing films for other people, and such and so on. Now, I guess to start things off, I am not a huge fan of Masaki Ueasa, because I think a lot of his work is incredibly animated. He puts a lot of work into his projects. They look incredibly animated. I always go in with expectations high because it has that name on it, and then I get kind of frustrated by the fact that either I don't like his character designs, or I find the things that don't look that animated and go, this doesn't look as animated as people make it out to be. So that's my frustration coming into this. I wanted to really enjoy this show, and I did for the most part. I think this was one of the ones that early in our first impressions, I was like, I'm not really getting into this at all. People were saying, you know, check it out. It's great at 4, whatever. It's a good show. A lot of hype around it. I'm sure this will probably be one of those shows that gets to be probably a lot of people's top list for the end of the year just because of the name on it and that they really enjoyed it. I'm not saying that's just the name. They really enjoyed it. I'm of two minds of this show because, yeah, I don't like the character designs. I still don't. I think the animation takes a lot of liberties. They do a lot of great animations, but at the same time, they do a lot of corner cutting that looks like it's animated, but it's not really. I think the frustration I have really is in the characters. I didn't really care much for the characters. I did enjoy when they started getting into the character stories. Sayaka ended up having a good backstory to her, why she is so into money, getting into Tsubame, and what she, essentially, her attention to detail and motion and how it kind of drives her to do very incredibly detailed animation. I thought that was really cool. I love the whole story with her grandma. Midoriya, I didn't really get much out of. Just really an overly creative mind and very imaginative character, which never really jumps out to me in the end. There's two sides of the show. Well, there's essentially three sides of the show. One side is they're running off into imaginary world and bringing other people into their imaginary world. The stuff they create manages to inspire people to be submerged into the creative world they make. Those parts are kind of boring to me. We're walking down the street and suddenly we see a pole on the ground and we start going into La La Land and overly explaining technical details of a mecha robot that we want to create. That stuff kind of really bores me. Not that it's a bad thing. I love it for the inspiration and imaginative aspect of it, but it just doesn't entertain me. That's the problem I have. The other aspect is the slice of life element, just the characters, you know, trying to make a club, struggling to push against the student council, even though it's way over the top at the time. They have, I think, a club for everything, which doesn't make any sense. I think they even had a club for AC control. That's weird, but it seemed like that was what the club that was, unless it was something else. I don't know. And then the other side is the obvious critique of the, not really critique of the anime world, but the kind of the insight into the anime world. Or not anime world, but anime production world. And at times it felt like it was trying to, explain itself to the common viewer. Like, this is how it is. I think early on, like right off the bat with the fourth episode, which people were kind of mentioning about, it goes right into time crunch. It gets into cutting corners, how they do things in order to make things still look in motion, but it's not really animated, just to get the finished product out in time. And then they go right into talking about essentially production committees. They had a group, the Robot Club, and they were hired to kind of make an anime about robots. And it was obviously kind of a sign of production committees and how they can kind of dip their hands into the whole creative process and try to change things that the creator himself doesn't want to actually change. They had a lot of that kind of stuff in there. Obviously with Tsubame, obviously Midori, who is the imaginative one, obviously the director doing the storyboards, really kind of creating the source material for it. Tsubame being the animation director, her whole thing is just the depth of what an animation director would probably see. Somebody who's a very gifted animator would view things this way. they had this whole scenario where she was with her grandma and her grandma's like tossing tea out of a cup, and she was enthralled by it just because of how it looked, how the motion looked. And it was really cool to see that. And of course, being Sayaka, being probably the producer, the manager of the studio, just kind of doing all the paperwork and making the phone calls and everything. I think it really came together, though. In the end, I really did enjoy it. It was kind of difficult to get through for the first half of it, because a third of the show is what I was enjoying. I partially enjoyed the slice of life. I mostly enjoyed the criticism of the animated world, or the animation world. And then, like, the later half of it, the characters started actually doing well. I think it's about the point in which they started getting Tsubame. I'm like, okay, cool, these characters have something to them, and I want to get into them. There's a depth to this character that pulls them into this animation world. And that was what I was kind of enjoying. And so in the end, I did enjoy it. It just had a very rough half, and most of the show wasn't appealing to me. Every time they got into the off the La La Land imaginary world, I kind of just kind of clocked out. And then when I got back out of it, I'm like, okay, cool. Well, let's get right back into this. I guess it's probably that I'm not as, I can't say that I'm not of a creative mind. I do this podcast. I've done websites. I've done coding. I'm a creative person. I've done graphics. It's just, I guess, their creative elements weren't that interesting to me. I don't know. I can't really
It was, and we got...
You had the same problem, didn't you?
Yeah,
the whole off in the La La Land kind of stuff wasn't that...
And I was trying to explain that it was kind of distracting, and we got some comments involved on well, this means that what they're doing here is just exploring creativity, and it's not like we didn't catch that. It's just that it was taken away from what was really interesting to us, and I don't know how to make it make more sense than that. That was just the one thing that to
and
us.
And it's funny because My Miracle was one of those shows where it literally was mostly, like, besides, like, this very end period that was, like, okay, suddenly now it's, like, reality and kind of rough. The most of that movie was imaginative creation. And I love that. But for some reason, this one didn't work for me. And I think it was because it was just so much trying to push mumbo jumbo of, like, well, there's this peril, and the peril turns like this and makes this thing push it up, and they're like, oh, but that'll push it around in circles, and that element loses me. Like, I like creative and imaginative, but when you start trying to, I guess, explain it, that's when I guess is what, like I said, I don't know why it didn't work for me. It just didn't work for me, so I guess I'll just leave it at that. In the end, The show is good.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I did enjoy it by the end. It just took getting into the characters and me finally realizing, yeah, besides technically, it obviously is a statement to the anime industry, but it wasn't until they showed how the characters had passion for that it started making me care, I guess. That's the only thing I can kind of draw a conclusion
Maybe
on.
If it's like a steak and putting Reese's peanut butter cups on top of the steak. And it is not necessary. I like Reese's peanut butter cups and I like steaks, but not necessarily together. I don't know how to make it make sense.
I don't know where you're going with that one.
I don't mind the creativity. I don't mind. I liked what they, the other side of what they were doing. It's just that they were taking away from each other to me.
Yeah, another thing they kind of hit on was, like, the element of trying to make something realistic and then realizing that no matter how realistic you make it, it's still going to seem unrealistic to somebody and have criticisms. So there was a few jabs in there that I'm like, I'm wondering if was created by some kind of criticism or something. It's kind of like the, what was that one show that they had an anime club and they were, each member was, like, part of some other culture of otaku and anime gotaries. Remember that, like, those whole little spiels, like, out of nowhere, and you're like, wow, okay, what, did somebody say something to you on Twitter? You decided to make an episode on it? It was kind of like that thing every now and then. But yeah, check it out. That's, I told Chris that it literally is Shirobako, but more comedic and imaginative. So you have Shirobako is very kind of heavy, very kind of grounded into the industry itself. You're literally watching grown-up animators doing a project, whereas this one is more kind of in the realm of, you know, the, you know, kids at school exploring their imagination, being a little over the top half the time with, like, the security club comes in with people in SWAT gear and guns. So it's like, okay, yeah, we got to suspend a little bit of disbelief there. So, and they have an entire club that is for sound, and he has four rooms full of sound effects and, yeah, AC club and all kind of stuff. So it's a little over the top at times, but it literally is a more comedic and goofy way of doing the whole anime industry kind of thing. So yeah, that's Keep Your Hands Off Izuken. Moving on, we have Magia Record, Puella Magia Madoka Magica Side Story, or Magia Record Maho Shoujo Madoka Magica Gaiden. This one streamed on Funimation and High Dive, ran for 13 episodes. Second season is already announced, so yay. I was telling Chris, it's like when we got done with that last episode of Magia Record, I'm like, I wonder where they're at from the mobile game, because, of course, based off a mobile game. So I went and checked out the kind of each of the segments of the game. And it was like at like chapter 6 or something of 9. So I'm hoping that maybe Japan has more source material in their game and we just haven't updated yet, because I think they're 2 years ahead of us in the game. So hopefully they'll have enough material for another season by the time that that one comes out. But they haven't set a date yet, so it could be a year from now or something. So anyways, studio is Shaft. The genres are drama, magic, psychological, and thriller. And this one follows Iroha, who is a magical girl. And for those who don't know, kind of the idea of Magia, or not Magia, the Puella Magia, Madoka Magica kind of universe, is that girls are confronted by a being called Kyubei. It's like this little creature thing that everybody wants to strangle. And Kyubei basically offers them a deal. I'll grant you any wish, and you'll become a magical girl. So that seems like, hey, win-win situation there. So they make a wish, they become a magical girl, they have to fight witches that are kind of corrupting humankind and hurting people. They kill the witches, absorb some kind of material from them for their little kind of, they get like this little gem thing that they can absorb the defeated witch into, and they go about their life. So all hunky-dory until you get into the actual story of it, which is, I don't know if we'll really kind of touch on here, but we might have to. I'm not sure. Anyways, Iroha is one of these magical girls. She had made a wish at some point. She doesn't remember what her wish was, but she does kind of have a hint of remembering a sister named Ui. And she's kind of trying to figure out what happened to Ui. Was it part of her wish? What kind of happened there? The Kyubei doesn't really know. Doesn't seem to want to tell her, or doesn't know. And at some point, the local magical girls start having dreams, and these dreams are telling these people to go to Kamihama City, where the magical girls can be saved. And so they're all kind of thinking of going there. At some point, they get on a train, they end up traveling there. And they come to find out that Kamihama City is full of very powerful witches, much more powerful than the previous city they were from. They run into a girl named Yachiyo, who is kind of a veteran magical girl, and kind of tells them to leave because it's too dangerous here. And thus they kind of move on from there to, they're not going anywhere. They end up staying there and kind of fighting the witches and trying to discover where Ui is. And then eventually running into the something magistuses? I forget the name of them.
Winged magistuses.
Winged magistuses? Magius. Yeah, Magius. Winged Magius or something like that. And they are a group that is essentially figured out a way of getting around the more bad side of being a magical girl, which if you've watched the original Puella Magica Madoka Magica, you'll know what that is, but I won't really necessarily say what it is. You might have to watch it for that. So yeah, your thoughts on Puella Magia Madoka Magica, no, Magia Record Puella Magia Madoka Magica Side Story. And then there's gonna be a second season after that.
I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was wonderful. I really liked the story. The bringing in the wonders and all that stuff was really cool. I really liked a lot of the baseline story. But for the first time, I think I've ever noticed, and I'm not saying that it's not happened before, but the first time I've ever noticed is Shortcuts from Shaft, which absolutely blew my mind.
I had to show him Makaku City Actors after he said something like that.
Well, I at the time, I was not really as big into the stuff as I was. And that was a weird... I don't even think we got to that episode, so I couldn't technically say that I knew of it.
I gave like 4 episodes into that one.
But anyway, I was really kind of... And it really wasn't that bad. It's very minor. It's just teeny tiny things that are here and there that if you've watched 500 billion shows, you tend to notice those kinds of things. But anyway, that aside... the character artwork was wonderful. That's the natural thing for a lot of these particular shows, or these particular stories. I just love it. So I
think at some point we're watching this, I was kind of getting a little bit of frustration. And I think it was mainly in the fact that a lot of the main characters like Iroha and Yachiyo didn't really have their characters explain, because I was trying to figure out what was different between this and something like Madoka Magica, the original series. And I think the thing that I was struggling with was that I guess I didn't get enough time to really kind of meet Iroha and really get into her as a character. We were just kind of just thrown right in. She is a magical girl. She's gone off to this location. She gets there. She's not powerful enough. It wasn't really a buildup of, okay, what was she before she was a magical girl and kind of getting to know her as a person, rather than we just got to know the magical girls of her. I think she has some great character moments later on, so don't get me wrong. It's just, it felt like at some point in the midpoint, I was going, this just really kind of feels like it's shifted to just being, let's show off enough characters for the game. Now, don't get me wrong, the game, it is literally following the story of the game, and the game does have a really good story for each of these characters. And I think especially when it gets into the Magius, that stuff is more fascinating, and I am really looking forward to where they go with it going forward. I guess I just didn't really connect with the characters as much as I did with, you know, Sayaka and Kyoko and all them, which is fantastic that they made cameos, even though some were a little bit more dark cameos than others. It visually looks great. I did enjoy the visual style of it. It was, I think we were talking earlier with our music impressions, our music episode, that it's like, oh yeah, I remember this is the Shaft style that I've kind of grown to love. For those that don't remember, way back when we first kind of got into Madoka Magica, I think Chris watched through the entire TV series. I dropped it. I hated the style. I really did. The labyrinths made me kind of angry, and I didn't like how they looked. They looked kind of like, you know, just stills flinging around the screen. It wasn't until the movies that I actually got into Puella Magia, Madoka Magica, and I thought it was a wonderful condensing of that story, whereas I thought the TV series was a lot more bloated. So
yeah, as far as the story is concerned, I didn't much care for how they treated the Iroha Ui thing. It's almost like
every now and then it just pops up like, hey, yeah, I'm still looking for Ui. It's like, it's like dude, shut up. We're dealing with Reina and Kaede right now, so you need to go to the side for right now. Reina and Kaede has got a friendship issue. Like a really bad friendship issue. Nobody cares about you, Rio, huh? But Ui, I don't care. Oh, by the way, here's a flashback of when Ui was inside the hospital. Roha, really? Do we need to get into that right now? There's a fight going on. Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. It felt like every now and then she would just pop up and go, I'm still looking for this person. Thankfully, it kind of shifted to more of Iroha, and Yachiyo is... That was the other thing. Why did you bring that up? Because now I got a frustration that popped up in my head. I didn't get the point in which Yachiyo and Iroha became friends. Like, they had they had this whole thing where they're like, if you go to this one location at the shrine and think of somebody, you'll see him or something like that. And Yachiyo ends up seeing somebody she was looking for, Mifuyu, and Iroha sees Ui. And then things happen. I won't really spoil things that happen right there. And then after that fight, it's like suddenly they're friends, and they're not, Yachiyo's not constantly telling her to go home or get away from me or whatever. And I'm like, was that enough? Like, that one scene was enough that they're now besties or something like that? Okay. Oh, I'll go with it. All right. Sure. But no, it's not a deal breaker. It was just kind of one of those I had a pause moment in the next episode going, wait, did I miss something? Now they're having tea? What changed? I really did like Rena and Kaede. And Momoko, too. That three grouping, it was technically more about Rena and Kaede. I really did enjoy their stories, which raised me really big question marks with what's going on right now. Which, by the way, kind of just drops on a pretty big little scene, which is not too big of a deal, but keep that in mind going into it. It does kind of closes on a climax. Did you notice that? It kind of is a climactic scene, and it kind of goes, hey, okay, see you next time kind of thing, which I kind of was expecting something like that based on the fact that it's an ongoing, again, mobile game with a long-going story. Yeah, great characters, some really cool action scenes that did kind of show off Shaft's style of creativity with their animation. The labyrinths are pretty cool. Like the whole, what was it, the potion of luck? I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of talking about with the wonders and how they incorporated that into mm-hmm. the whole magic system.
Yeah,
the steps system.
And stuff yeah. like that. Yeah, I get what you're saying. So yeah, it's just got a lot of really creative characters. I love seeing a lot of cameos of characters that I technically have in the game because I do play the mobile game. Getting into the Doppels, which I won't say what those are, but you'll know when they talk about them. Getting the Doppels, all that kind of stuff is really cool. Seeing the characters that I kind of like in the game kind of come to life, it was cool. So, like I said, I think my only frustration is in Roha and Nui's story, not really getting anywhere, which you don't really expect to get anywhere. Love the cameos, love the Rena Kaede part. Really enjoy getting into the Magius. Looking forward to seeing what they do with the Magius going forward. It's kind of an interesting, I guess, tangent to go on in the Madoka Magica world. I was kind of... This is kind of similar to the Fate Grand Order thing, where I kind of got a very brief moments of kind of getting an idea of what's going on, but it's not a story that I've really sat down and fully read through. So to get it fully animated is fantastic, because for some reason, a lot of these mobile games in Japan, they actually put really good stories into them. So being able to watch them animated and not just text is fantastic. So looking forward to more.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. That's Magia Record, Magia Record, Puella Magi Madoka Magica Side Story. The animation, season one, because season two is coming. So I don't know when the season two, I'd probably expect that probably next year, if anything. Your turn, Chris. Welcome to Demon School Irma-kun, or Marimashita Irma-kun. Streaming on the Crunchyroll, running for 23 episodes. The second season has already been announced. Done by Studio Bandai Namco Pictures. Sources of manga. Genres are comedy, demon, supernatural, fantasy, shonen. And the series composition was by Kazuyuki Furuyasu, who did Bento, Denki Gai, Hajime no Ippo, which is probably why Chris likes it, and Yaman Lights. So, what is Welcome to Demon School Irma-kun's summary?
Irma-kun, he was on a boat doing work to make money for his parents, I think. I don't remember. It's been so stinking long.
Something like that. He got squished by frozen fish or something like that.
Yeah, he was getting ready. He's got some kind of weird ability to be able to dodge, like, everything, and so technically he wasn't, or he was going to get squished, but randomly time froze. And he gets taken to hell, and he finds out that, oh yeah, his parents sold him to the devil to pay off their debts, because they're horrible parents, I'm sure. But anyway, the devil that he was sold to is named Sullivan. He's one of the three great demons of hell, and just so happens to run a school. So he's going to go to the school and be
Well, Sullivan wanted Irma-kun to be his son.
Grandson.
And since they kind of point out early on, and this is what I kind of remember from it, was that he has like a really deep issue with saying no to people.
Yeah, that's
so even
that's
though
true
this demon guy is asking him to be his grandson, he has to say yes. So, yeah, he becomes his grandson.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the gist of the show. And it just gets crazier from here. they actually have explanations as to why demons are not quite as evil as is implied. They come from a horrible past, and now they're a lot more lighter than they were back then, but they still embrace aggression and all that stuff. It's so goofy. And as time gets on, I ended up bringing this in to show Andrew at some point. The randomness in this show is absolutely near spot on. It's not always laugh out loud funny. It is just goofy fun in general. But every once in a while, it just hits it, and it hits it right on. And this particular scene that I brought to Andrew, it was like, I was watching through, and then just randomly they just pop into a kind of one of those in the middle of the streets singing and show tune type thing, and it was like, okay, this is absolutely random, and I couldn't stop from laughing at it. It just was so off the wall. But yeah, it's just a lot of goofy fun. It's not, don't get me wrong, it's not like the greatest show ever. It's just goofy fun. And the best I could put it towards is if you kind of enjoy the kind of concept of the whole Harry Potter series, I kind of feel like this is just like that. It's,
That's an insult to Irmuk.
it's underdog kid gets stuck in this really off the wall world and how he lives through that. And that's, to me, that's how this show comes to me as.
All right. That's welcome to Demon School, Irmakun. I actually enjoyed the first few episodes I watched. I just never got back to it. So Inspector or Kyoko Suiri. This one was streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by studio Brainsbase. These sources among the genres are comedy, demon, mystery, romance, shonen, supernatural. The director was Keiji Goto, who did Kitty Grade and Inride. Series composition by Noboru Takagi, who did Durarara, Bakano, Golden Kamuy, Kodaka no Basuke. And the creator was Kyo Shiro Daira, who did Blasted Tempest. This one was basically follows a guy named Kuro, who is currently at a hospital trying to take care of his loved one that was there. And at some point, he bumps into a girl named Kotoko, who kind of falls in love with him at first sight and ends up finding out that he actually has a girlfriend already named Saki. And then later on, Saki breaks up with Kuro, and he ends up bumping up with Kotoko again, and she kind of is taking the advantage of the situation now that he no longer has a girlfriend and pretty much proposes to be his girlfriend because she's kind of enamored by him. So come to find out, Kuro has kind of these innate abilities. He's able to kind of regenerate himself. His flesh is kind of poisonous to yokai. And Kotoko is what she calls a god of wisdom. She was blessed. She had to sacrifice a leg and an eye in order to become a god of wisdom for the yokai, and the yokai come to her for help. And so she's kind of enlisting Kuro as both her boyfriend and as a partner, and able to, in order to be able to help the yokai and solve issues that are surrounding the yokai. And so thus begin their shenanigans in their day-to-day life. So, thoughts, Chris? Because this one might be a difficult one for me to go through.
It's going to be a difficult one for me as well. This is one of those that, okay, to be fair, okay, first off, I absolutely love the character artworks. First off, no getting around that. I absolutely love a lot of the characters. Especially the main girl. She's just absolutely wonderful to me. I love her to death. A lot of the other characters, I just really enjoyed them, and that's all there really is to it. The story itself has a lot of potential, but there is one glaring problem with these stories, and I'm sure Andrew is going to hit it first off. So I'm going to pass the baton to him so I can do the good stuff and he can be the bad guy.
Drags out?
Yes, it does.
A little bit. No, I'm the same. I'm the same mind. I really do like the characters. I think early on, we kind of echoed the same thing with Kotoko. She's got a very bubbly and very fun attitude. She's always very kind of not. It's funny. She's like a Genki that doesn't talk too much, and she doesn't jump around all the place. She's very kind of very proper. She has a cane because obviously she's lost a leg and she has a prosthetic. But she always has this cane, and every time that something is brought up, a question is asked, she immediately taps the ground and says, hi. She's got a very bubbly and fun and very uplifting kind of personality, and it makes it a very addicting show to watch just because of her character. Kudo kind of is just really the offset of her. He's very kind of, doesn't speak too much, has a very kind of mono emotion to himself.
He's a solid wall.
Yeah, essentially.
He's some kind of he's a support for her.
Right. Very offsetting.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy when Saki came back in the picture. I really did like her character. She was kind of the, I guess, straight man to the kind of oddities that they're kind of dealing with. So it was fun to get her perspective of things. The cat fight between Kotoko and Saki was great.
It was great.
I really enjoy the characters in this show. I love the look into the police office, watching Saki as she was trying to figure out things from a more normal side, and then getting into Kotoko and Kuro, who's dealing with it more on the supernatural side. That's what made the show for me. The problem is that outside of that is these very, very long, drawn-out stories. And I wouldn't mind that so much. Like, I'm aware of story arcs. It essentially had three story arcs to this entire thing. There was kind of the opening segments. Then there was the whole essentially the snake, the person who dropped the body in the lake, and then there's the whole very long story of Still Lady, extremely long story of Still Lady.
Okay, to give you an idea, okay, the introduction was maybe an episode maybe two episodes. The snake section was at best three episodes.
Yeah,
so that's about five episodes. The Steel Lady arc was the whole rest of the show. That's how long it was. And to be more clear, it's not necessarily, okay, when we say it's dragging out, we're talking about talk, which is good in one respect because you get this cute girl doing a lot of talking, but what she's talking about is not necessarily that interesting. What's worse is that she's repeating a lot of stuff.
No, that was the issue. And
you'll get a very clear idea once you've sat through the snake arc. You'll understand that. Imagine that times five episodes worth on this, or the seven episodes worth on the Steel Lady.
Yeah, and I think they kind of emphasized on this when Kotoko and Saki were in the car and during the Steel Lady arc. And at some point, they were kind of, I think Kotoko herself said it, that this is where her strength is at. And it almost seemed like they were emphasizing the idea that her strength was in wisdom and being able to kind of create stories. And it almost felt like that's what she was doing with the snake, with the body in the lake, was this idea of she was weaving a story. And it seemed like it was the same thing what she was doing which she kind of mentioned the idea that this is why me and Kuro are such a good team, is because, kind of soft spoiler, one thing that Kuro can do is that he can reach to essentially possible futures. And Kotoko is able to kind of imagine those things. I haven't really said that those intertwine to each other, but it's almost as if that's what they were doing with the whole entire Still Lady arc. It's fascinating. I love it. It's creative. It's different.
Oh, wow. Lady was the entire show.
No, what is that first episode's kind of introductions. Second episode starts out with the whole thing with the body in the lake. At the very later parts of episode three, they kind of conclude that, and then from then on, it's Still Lady. So, wow. Yeah, essentially, almost 10 episodes worth. But my point is, like, again, I'm not against arcs, story arcs. I'm not against them having 9 episodes to Still Lady. I'm not against them to having five episodes to the murder in the lake. The problem was, is that it was mostly outside of, technically it was a lot of kind of trying to find out what happened, discovering what happened with the Still Lady, where did the Still Lady come from. But the problem was that it happened with the snake, and it happened for probably four episodes of the Still Lady arc, was them fabricating stories. It wasn't telling a story. It wasn't telling the truth about a story. It wasn't, uncovering the truth about what... We already knew what happened by the time this happened. It was her fabricating stories for four episodes. And they weren't the truth. We already knew what the truth was. And that was what was frustrating, was that, yeah, technically they were getting more into what Saki or Rika was. They got more into what Kurdo can do. But in a sense, what it was doing was telling fake stories over and over and over again. And that's what was frustrating, was that I wasn't getting a story being told to me. I was getting essentially fake stories over and over again that I know were fake. And that was the struggle. Again, it was very clever in the end. The concept is very, very clever. I love the characters. I just couldn't stand being told fake stories over and over again that I knew were fake. It got boring after a while. I think at some point, I think it was literally probably by the 10th episode, I'm like, just end this already. Like, this seriously needs to end by this point. I'm getting tired of this. This is very, very repetitive what you're doing. And I don't know, I really do, I'm kind of fascinated to know what their, I guess the creator's mindset was in doing this. I know that based on the creator himself, he's done things that frustrate me. Like, we loved Blast of Tempest. Fantastic opening. I love that whole story about the murdered sister. I thought that was great. And then what does Blast of Tempest do? It jumps the shark like at the later point and turns into almost like a Superman kind of or superhero kind of thing. And I was like, what are we doing here?
I almost want to go back and watch that. I remember loving the show, but I can't remember. I want to go back and watch it because I do remember it got really weird towards the end, but yeah. I don't remember how I felt about that. So I'd have to almost go back to the review to see how I felt about it.
But I think I had the same thing with that one, as I loved Blast Tempest.
But for the character artwork was fantastic in Blast of Tempest, too.
Just see with that one. I guess I'm kind of beating the dead horse at this point. I really, like I said, I really did enjoy the characters. I loved getting into Kuro's story and what makes him. I thought that was kind of twisted. Yes, very twisted. Very kind of upsetting stuff that kind of happens in his past. And the stuff that happens to him is very gruesome, so keep that in mind. It doesn't really hide the fact that he can... Being immortal, really terrible things happen to him. Very, very terrible things happen to him. So, yeah. Just seemed like it spun its wheels way too much. And it was very frustrating in that regard. So, I guess it's like... It's one of those things where it was technically playing a game of cat... I don't know if a cat and mouse, but like a... Just a game of chess. It was a game of chess between essentially three people. And two people were on one side, one person on the other. And... It just, I guess I wish that it portrayed it better. Maybe that's the problem. But in the end, it just was kind of, I wanted it to end. And that really sucks. I hate to have a show that I'm just really kind of begging it to end. Even, especially when it kind of opened up so well and I love the character so much. The little shenanigans here and there are really great, though. I loved the constant back and forth between Sokka and Kotoko. Kuro kind of seems like a jerk, especially a lot, but like I said, he's definitely a kind of a contrast to Kotoko, so.
Which she technically is kind of pushy. I mean, I love it, but she is kind of pushy, and...
Yep. Good opening and ending, too.
Yeah. Stuff.
So, yeah, it's definitely one that when a season two comes out, I'm really going to want to watch it, and that tells you anything. I want more. I just hope that stories going forward don't end up being this kind of repetitive. So that is Inspector.
Check that out. At least if they do, I mean, it doesn't matter if they're longer stories, but just do yeah. them differently somehow.
Yeah. Like I said, you can have an entire 9 episodes of the body in the lake. Just don't just keep weaving stories over and over again. All right, moving on. We have Necropata. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Felix Films. The source is a visual novel. The genres are comedy and romance, and the director was Yasutaka Yamamoto, who did Hanamaru Zuma and Servant X Service. And this one takes place at the La Soleil. It is a kind of a cake pastry type shop that this guy named Kasho has taken over, and it kind of just jumps right into it. Suddenly, you're kind of following the characters that are already kind of present. I think in the original visual novel, he kind of meets them over time. I haven't really kind of looked too much into it. But anyways, he is surrounded by cat girls, essentially. In this world, cats are cat girls. And similar to cats, they kind of have to have masters. They kind of don't want strays out in the world. Cat girls in this world, they have to have bells if they want to go out on their own. Otherwise, they have to be kind of present with their masters. And they kind of have the same, elements to them that you would kind of present as being a regular cat, where they have to get checkups on a regular basis. They have problems being potty trained, stuff like that. It is kind of weird in that regard. It does kind of hit on those elements of being... I think it was by episode 3 or so, I was like, oh, these are literally cats in this world. These aren't... Yes, they talk and everything, which is does kind of make it a little weird, but in this world, these are literally cats. They kind of are treated the same way as normal cats would. They are kind of pets. Not so much that it's kind of abused in any way, at least not what I've seen with this particular TV series, but they are technically kind of animals in this world that are taken care of by their masters, and they still communicate with them like normal, though. So it's weird. It's weird, but hey, it's cat girls, so I'm not going to complain. I'm going to watch it. And to kind of specify, though, I wasn't really too into the show when we did our first impressions. It just seemed like it was a very standard cute girls doing cute things, but not really necessarily anything particularly interesting. It was just a excuse to watch cat girls. And it wasn't really until I kind of kept watching it that I just kind of found it to be my, I guess, sugar show that I was wanting Bofuri to be for this particular season. So I'm glad that I went back to it just to kind of get a show that's just kind of very mellow, laid back, cutesy, cat girls looking cute, being technically cats. Like having the two girls, I think it was mostly Coconut and Azuki being like constantly at each other, like cats growling at each other, was just dorky. I don't know that Coco had anything to do with the original visual novel. I haven't seen anything on Coco until I watched the show. So I think that she was something that was kind of implanted for this TV series alone. So it was a lot of kind of bringing Coco into the mix, which I think was kind of an interesting way of kind of explaining the world through explaining it to Coco. Really did enjoy Coconut and Azuki. I think mainly because of the fact that Coconut is heterochromia and Andrew likes heterochromic characters that I naturally drawn to Coconut, but I love Coconut and Azuki. I think they're my favorite of all the characters. Chocola and Vanilla are definitely probably one of the more popular characters in the show because there's a million figures of them.
But Vanilla is awesome.
They're definitely cool little mixtures to each other. They definitely offset each other's personalities. Coco's a lot more upbeat and Vanilla's more kind of subdued. Cinnamon was like literally the, I guess, thirsty girl of the match. Like I seriously went through like 3 episodes. I'm like, okay, I know what this is from. I've seen things of this Necropata visual novel thing. This is very clean. It's like the show was extremely clean. And 3 episodes in, besides Cinnamon yelling that she's getting wet because of the situation, it was very clean. No panty shots or anything, like, even to speak of. And I was kind of blown away by that because I know what the visual novel was. I know what the source material is. So to have a show that's very kind of clean didn't really make sense to me, besides the fact that I'm really trying to push it to a general audience, which is very weird because the general audience would want to know what the original source material is. And that's one that's kind of – things get crazy. They changed that a little bit. I think it was 5, 4, 5, suddenly out of nowhere. It's like not like – crazy stuff. I think the furthest they went to anything kind of, you know, suggestive was probably, again, Cinnamon always kind of yelling that same thing. Coco checking the plumpness of each one of the girls' chests and then getting stuck on Coconut. And some bath scenes, and that was about it. And them standing around in their underwear for kind of a their regular screenings. That was probably the extent of it. Oh, yeah, they also had a Keijo episode where they were competing against each other, and so they got on a platform on water and started bumping butts against each other to see who would win. So I was like, okay, Keijo's back. It's just in Necropata, so there you go. It was very mellow. It wasn't a funny show, and I think that's the only thing that kind of pushes against it, is it would think a show like this would be really funny. I didn't really find it funny. I found it very sweet at times. I love Chiyo and Coco. I think they were adorable together. I loved when Coco came back from Chiyo's kind of visit and the kind of motherly instincts that Coco, Chocolate had. I think there was one point that I laughed out loud, and that was they were training for the bell renewal that Coco, Chocolate had to do. And so they started doing like all the things of that you would expect in the training. So it's almost like Chris was joking about it. It's like a driver's license, which is kind of technically that. They're going through all these different things that cats can't do or things that they should do in certain situations in order to be allowed to go on, you know, outside without their master. Sense of direction, fighting against your cat instincts, stuff like that. And they did the whole thing where they went to this, they were getting on a train and it had like captions, get on a train successfully or something like that. And it just cuts to Coco, this little lolly cat. And she just gets this big running start, leaps, and slides underneath the doors for the train station. And everybody's like, good jump. And it was so random. It just got a huge kick out of me. So, it's just kind of a very, very laid back, fluffy cat girls going about their daily lives. It's fascinating the world they kind of created for this, especially since knowing what the material source material is. But I knew that a lot of it's kind of like the whole I read the Playboys for the articles. But it's essentially that. I know that there is technically a world there that has some very cute characters that have their own issues. It's unfortunate that it seemed like they didn't want to get into any characters specifically and really kind of dive into them as characters. I think the only ones that really got anything done for them was probably Azuki and Coconut. The rest of them kind of just seemed like very, I guess, already established or something. I don't know what they were doing there. So maybe the OVA had the other characters and they're establishing or something. They got a little bit into Cinnamon and Maple too. So yeah, surprisingly nothing for Chocolate and Vanilla, which is very weird. So yeah, that's Necropata. If you want cute cat girls serving pastries and cakey, check that one out. 22/7. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio A1 Pictures. The source is a Aniplex idol group that they're trying to produce, I guess. The genres are music and idols. I would say idols, too. I don't know why they just added music. Slice of life, probably too. A little bit of supernatural, I would suggest. Just throwing some genres out there. Take it or leave them. This one follows a girl named Mew. Early on, she seems to be very introvert. Doesn't like to really communicate with people very much. Doesn't like to smile. Seems to have a lot of issues with communicating to people. Trying to work. Doesn't seem to work well at her workplace at a convenience store. And at some point, she receives a letter. Actually, there's like 8 total girls that receive a letter at the same exact time. An invitation by this 22/7 project. And they all meet at this one zoo. And they don't quite know what they're doing there. But they figure it's something to do with for idols. And then suddenly a guy named Aogoda shows up. Very big, huge guy shows up and takes them to a kind of underground facility where they come to find this big wall in this one room. And this big wall every now and then chimes and kicks out a little, you know, metal plate card with an etching on it telling them what to do. And Aogoda basically says this wall, this entire corporation's built around this wall. Everything this wall kicks out is absolute and it must be followed. It wanted us to invite all of you to join an idol group, 22-7, and you're going to be idols. And, of course, Miu, being very introvert, is like, hell no, I can't do that. She leaves. And they're like, it's going to happen. She has to join. It has to be a full party of eight. Otherwise, this doesn't happen. The wall is absolute. And she ends up coming back. They kind of kick up an idol group, and the wall keeps giving them different really crazy things they have to do. And that is 22-7, an idol show about a wall that is absolute. You will do as the wall says.
You don't understand. We made so much fun of that stupid wall. The wall is the most absolutely bizarre thing about this
show. I was
just
waiting for it to kick out, like, you must kill this person. And he's like, oh, the wall's absolute. Stop. Go to no. God, it was so cool, though.
The show is a great show. I mean, we got some really great character moments. We got some wonderful songs. Can't say so much wonders about their CG dancing, but that's kind of normal.
This is the only one you get angry about with the CGI dancing.
I was giving you some leeway there. I'm helping Andrew out so that he doesn't have to be the bad guy on this one.
You saved me the word.
But no, the wall is this kind of weird quirk to this show, and it is kind of a goofy thing in one respect. Like I said, we made so much fun of that wall. The wall became the joke of this show, and it kind of became endearing, at least for me. It was like, okay, like Andrew said, the wall is absolute. So, I mean, and the final couple of episodes were kind of an interesting kind of point. Because you almost see that they were trying to play this breaking through, and they literally are doing this breaking through of what's holding you back, and the girls going out and doing what they did towards the end was a really neat kind of thing for that, and I did really enjoy that. So surprisingly, I actually really like this show, and I'm very impressed with the kind of cool little quirks that they added to this to bring it its own flavor as far as an idol show is concerned. So take that for what it is.
I don't remember what I said or where I said it, but 22-7 actually turned out to be one of my favorite idol shows ever. I think I mentioned it in the last episode when we talked about Budokan, which that one become like my favorite show, idol show ever. But this was like right there with right underneath that and Cinderella Girls. I think Cinderella Girls is still a lot better than this one, but this is probably easily my third favorite idol show of all time. And it's very surprising because when we first came into the show, I think the thing that really was jarring for me was the seiyus. Miu's seiyu was very off, and I couldn't figure it out. She had a very kind of gruff and shaky voice to her, which I think technically matches what her personality was, but it just still felt off, especially when you had the character being very kind of animated and yelling, and this very kind of soft and not projecting voice is trying to say something, and it just felt very off. And I know that a lot of these seiyus are technically new. They were kind of fashioned for this idol group. And I felt like Muse was the one that was the most jarring. And I think that was a very off-putting thing for the early parts of it. She was very gloomy, which I'm fine with a character being very gloomy and introvert and having to struggle with that in order to become an idol. She definitely was the most dynamic character in the show because she's going from basically negative to you know, extreme positives in a very short amount of time. And I think the whole wall absolute thing really became a joke because I wanted something to grab onto, and I felt that was really funny, and we had a lot of kicks out of making fun of that. But it was funny that coming into it, expecting it to be kind of a throwaway idol show, laughing about this very weird quirk about the wall, and really wondering if they're going for realism or if they're just going to be completely crazy and jump out with aliens and everything, controlling the wall and controlling the mind of these girls or some weird thing. It just suddenly out of nowhere just punched me and said, oh wow, I really like this show. Like, and it really took them getting away from Miu and jumping into, I think the next one was Sakura, and getting into her kind of backstory with her grandma. That was like, suddenly I'm like, wow, I think it was really Sakura going after Miu. When Miu and Sakura had a story, like, I think at some point, she was saying something like, you know, you're here to bring me back, aren't you? And she's like, no, I just want to make sure you're okay. It really hit me. Like, that whole entire conversation and getting into their backstories was what really hit me. And I loved every character's story after that. Loved them to death. Loved June. Loved Akane. Akane, I think, was probably the one that I wasn't really expecting to like out of all of them. And I really did like Akane. Her story was just absolutely heartbreaking. They're great. I mean, yeah, technically some of them kind of play on the whole, you know, past relatives or the illness things. But I guess just the storytelling and how they told those stories. It's like technically a lot of stories are always new, repeated stories, but how they told those stories really did hit me. And so I absolutely loved every single one of them. Loved the piano scene with Miu. Some great stuff. I really did. And I think that's one of the huge selling sides to idol shows. You can have them have great performances. You can animate the performances. Not use CGI, and I'll love it. You can have great performances, great music, great character designs. I don't care. An idol show to me is the characters. And if the characters don't get sold to me, it failed as an idol show. And that's what sold me on Cinderella Girls. It sold me on, technically, Budokun. But it definitely sold me on this show, was the characters. And I can ignore the goofy wall. It was a goofy thing that we had a lot of fun out of. I can ignore the CGI dancing. I can even throw away the fact that I thought that the ending was a little bit like, what are we doing here? But I loved the characters, and that makes it a fantastic idol show to me.
Yeah, I really enjoy Miu. I got sold on Miu right away. The funny thing is to give you an idea of how well they pull off the even the most contrived of stories is one in particular character ends up being kind of a part of Miu's past. And to get into this character's past, you also end up in this, in Miu's past. And it absolutely did a wonderful, even though it was a very contrived story, it was a wonderful telling of a character moment for both of these characters. And it really, really made them both shine at the same time. I really loved it.
Yeah, I'd like that too. Funny thing for those that actually watch the show, I was totally expecting, I'll just say when they broke a certain barrier in a very late episode, wink, I was expecting a giraffe to jump out.
Not me.
What got him was.
I did laugh when you mentioned that.
It's like, it's going to be a giraffe. Here comes a giraffe. They're at a zoo. They're near a zoo.
Hey, we're in a zoo. That is a fact.
So yeah, 22/7. If you love idol shows, you have to go watch it. It's just a given. They did technically at the very end hint at three new people. Hopefully we don't end up with a Wake Up Girls. Hopefully it's not a Wake Up Girls situation, because that didn't work out well with Wake Up Girls when they introduced three new characters at the very end and then made a new season out of it. But they do have an extra episode they're going to be doing for it, for the Blu-ray, for those extra characters, and then hopefully that'll open doors for another season. I would like more, but I'm always very hesitant because when you've already explored all the characters, it makes it difficult for doing another season.
I will admit there is an aspect to that that does concern me, but I think that they did well enough that I'm comfortable with the writing in this show. Wake Up Girls, it almost felt like it was handed off to somebody else. If that makes any sense, because the story writing was night and day between seasons. So it doesn't, it's almost like I don't even want to consider season two a thing.
I just try to forget that it was an idol show that I watched. All right. That was 22 divided by 7. Check it out, if you will. Show by Rock. Mashu Maireshu is the next one. This one is streaming on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes. Of course, it is a sequel to the Show by Rock series that we actually really, really enjoy. But this one follows a group that eventually calls himself Mashu Maireshu, which starts off with Hoan, who is out in the sticks, way, way out of the city of Midi City. Of course, we know Show by Rock as being Cyan, who was dragged into her phone into the world of Midi City. I totally forgot that until I just mentioned that just now. Mm-hmm. I forgot that she was playing a rhythm game and then got sucked into the world of Midi City.
When we ended up fighting monsters. When we ended up seeing her, it was like almost like, I wonder if she got yanked in again or if she figured out how to just jump into her phone at some point.
I think at some point in the other one that she eventually kind of just knew how to get back there. So I don't remember what they were doing with that whole thing. At some point, they forgot that they were doing that until she was having to go back or something like that. But anyways, she gets an invitation to go to Midi City because she is an aspiring guitarist and wants to do music. And she goes to Midi City where she bumps into Himeko, Delman, and Ruhuyu, who are all band members currently playing on the side of the road. Hoan has lost her invitation to go to this particular thing, and they end up finding it. But she ended up joining up with them, actually kind of followed them like a lost kitten, and back into their little studio where Himeko's father kind of ran the place, and they practiced there and eventually become a band and play music, because that's what you do in Midi City, is play music.
Everybody plays music in Midi City.
Probably not, but a lot of people do. They really do love music in Midi City. So your thoughts on this particular iteration? New group. It's not Cyan and Retori and all of them. It's Hoan.
It's so funny.
It's definitely not Cyan. It's definitely not Retori. What do you think?
The funny thing about this particular, it's almost like I kind of want to go back and watch the ones that we kind of skipped because when we got into this, it was like, they sold me really well on this and I really enjoyed these characters and it almost makes me want to go back. I'm scared to do it still because I wasn't really big on the guy bands, but every once in a while they keep tossing these guy bands into these shows and it's like, stop it. I don't want to like these guys.
Which one do we skip?
I think we skipped, I thought we skipped one at some point because it was a guy band and it not necessarily because it was,
I think they're doing a guy band one, but I don't think they've done
it. I know that there's another one coming up.
Yeah. They're doing a guy band one and they're doing
season I thought they three. Were going back and forth every season.
No. I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. Now, I wasn't as big on season two as I was season one. That's for sure. Yeah, Show by Rock Sharp. The shorts, Maireshu. And later on, well, they have like an ONA for some chibis. And then Stars is coming up here soon. Legend of Shingen is Crimson is the guy one. Plasmagica is getting an ONA. So we haven't skipped any. Unless you didn't watch Sharp. I thought you watched Sharp with me.
No, we probably did. Okay. That that take that for what it is. I am wrong. But I really did enjoy this. I think I'm going to go ahead and watch the guy one that's coming up. I think that they do a really good job of selling characters. Whether you want to like them or not, you're going to end up liking
them. Well, it's the Crimsons. You're going to enjoy the Crimsons. So, yeah. Did it?
Yeah.
All right. I think the funny thing is that I joked about it earlier, but I did kind of see Ho-On and Himeko being very Cyan and Retori. They have that kind of similar, kind of almost very borderline Yuri, cute little relationship between the two of them. Having Delamin and Ryuhyu being basically the same thing, but just kind of more separated. It had almost like a pairing thing going on between the two of them. I didn't really enjoy these characters. I thought Himeko was... I think it's funny because I think in the original series, I was drawn to Retori because she had that similar kind of tsundere, very closed in, but also kind of caring when you kind of take a moment to examine it. Himeko had the same thing going for her. Extreme, I guess technically with Delamin too, extreme ringlets to a whole nother level, which was kind of funny seeing them kind of laid down or something like that. You're like, where the hell does she put those ringlets? Those things are huge. But no, Ho-On's got this very kind of cute, very oblivious attitude to herself, very loving and wanting to be a part of something. Himeko being very kind of pushy away, very to herself, having to break out of that boundary. Ryuhyu being extremely over the top, almost chuny. It's like every 2 seconds, it's a mystery. We have to solve it. It's just ketchup.
Everything is lunatic.
Yeah, very lunatic. Delamin, I almost wanted them to kind of get in Delamin.
I don't think you're really realizing how that word actually works. It's not what you think it means. I know the word you're trying for, but that's not what you're using that word for.
And Delamin being like one of those very few cases of almost, not very robotic. She's not very robotic, but very close to that kind of attitude, but very, very soft as well. And I really did enjoy her too. So, the Dokonji finger group was, yeah, very weird. I told Chris at some point, I seem to remember with the other show by Rock as well, having this kind of thing of going back and forth between the girls and the boys. And I almost forgot that that was a thing that they did. And they definitely did it here as well. They went back and forth between the following, Mashu Marimeshi and then following Dokonji finger. And I, similarly with the old one, I always felt like I'm going to be very disappointed following the guys for an episode, and I end up always actually really enjoying them. And it is just really the fact that I think the writers have a really great capability of making characters that you do want to see very over the top, but characters that you do want to kind of see goof around and do things with. Yeah, I did really like the, I don't remember what their name of their group was, but Varanen and the other two girls that Ho-On ended up bumping into who were extremely popular. They end up taking Ho-On under their wing and kind of wanting to hire her into their group. I thought their music was great. I kind of felt like they, almost kind of anticlimactic with them.
Well, I think that they were doing something really kind of weird and interesting, because if you think about it,
they were almost throwing a contract at her, and at some point it just kind of walks away from it.
Well, they're literally the exact same groups. The right down to Rararen is Himeko, Delamin is Uyui, and I'm guessing you didn't get to know the other girl very well, but I would assume that she was supposed to be the Ryuhyu of that group. And literally, you can take a shortcut and do this and become famous right away, or you can go back and play music fun of it.
They were obviously drawing a parallel to the idea of Rararen. They kind of showed a little picture of them when they were, just starting out, and they chose to go this route rather than to keep what Ho-On was keeping with, which was doing things that you enjoy,
right?
Rather than what you. It's that whole story, but I just felt like it was anticlimactic in the end. I almost felt like they could have done more with them, but it almost felt like they were trying to create an antagonist with them just to have an antagonist, because In this one, they don't have crazy psychotic monsters attacking that they have to transform and play music to attack with. But no, Hoenn's, I keep hitting on it over again. I love the characters. They're adorable. Nothing, you know, over the top, crazy, hilarious, but I did get a good chuckle from it every episode. So that's all I really asked for, was show by Rock.
It took me forever to figure out the whole Phoenix thing. I did not get the Phoenix thing. That's the one character that I sat there and I did not understand until randomly they go and pop up. Oh yeah, he's a Phoenix. Oh, his entire character joke makes sense now that I know he's a Phoenix.
So yeah. And we had cameos too. Even got the Sharing Zan group pop up out of nowhere. I was like, when they popped up, I'm like, holy crap, it's them. They're actually here. And then of course
later on we had Dawn Crimson.
Finally had a little cameo of Cyan and all them, which was great. Getting ready for that new season, Show by Rock Stars. I'm curious what they're gonna do with Show by Rock Stars. I hope it's not too, I guess, chaotic, because you have a lot of characters that they've kind of introduced over the last few seasons now, and I'm really afraid of them having too many characters to the point where it's going to get muddled. But we'll see. We'll see. Kind of like...
I think they do well at balancing groups. So I think it'll get kind of... I don't think it's going to be muddled so much as it's just going to do what they're already doing. It's just going to be more bands and...
I'll see.
I seriously doubt they're going to put them all in one screen and start doing the... Everybody has to say
everybody
something
respond
about...
respond to everything. What was that?
That was that stupid... the
volleyball getting...
It was either the volleyball or the cheerleading.
Cheer, squad. Yeah, the cheer boys. Cheer dancey. Yeah. That one. Somebody like walks a step and everybody has to say what they think about him taking that one step. And then they pick up a ball and they all have to respond to what they picked the ball up for. Anyways, Pet is our next one. This one streamed on Amazon, ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio Jinno Studio in partnership with Twin Engines. The source is a manga. The genres are mystery, psychological, supernatural, and seinen. Director was Takahiro Omori, who did Bakano, Da-da-da, Natsumi's Book of Friends, and Samurai Flamenco. The series composition by Sadayuki Murai, who did Natsumi's Yojincho, Knights of Sidonia, Cowboy Bebop script work, and script work for Perfect Blue. So, some pretty big people on this one. And this one, the first two episodes are really weird. The first episode is extremely confusing, so if you're curious and you're extremely confused by the first episode, the second episode explains everything, but... essentially follows a guy named Hiroki and his friend Tsukasa. And in the early episodes, you kind of had them working at a bar, or actually staying at the bar, taking care of it while living there. And then their friend kind of gets involved with some incident, and there you come to find out that they are actually what they call crushers. And this company that Tsukasa works for, which they just call it the company, essentially hires in and trains crushers, who are people that are able to actually get into the subconscious of somebody, mess with things inside of their head to the point where they can either change memories, hypnotize them essentially, or to the worst effect, which they call crushing, which is where you completely break somebody's subconscious to the point where they just become, you know, vegetables. And it's kind of weird in the fact that Tsukasa is working for this company. It's obviously a very dangerous company that manipulates people, takes out people using hypnotism, and they're almost like hired hitmen. Whereas Hiroki isn't necessarily wanting to work for the company. He really doesn't like Tsukasa working for them, wants to kind of, you know, run off alone together and get away from this bad company. But Tsukasa obviously knows that it's kind of like the mafia. You don't just leave. You'll get killed if you leave, kind of thing. So Tsukasa is kind of forced to keep working for the company while Hiroki is kind of whining at their little fish shop over and over again. the story kind of expands from there. It really gets into how the subconscious works in this world, is that everybody has what they call peaks and valleys. And everybody kind of needs to have these in order to have a very kind of normal subconscious. If one of those breaks, they, again, get crushed. And so there's a lot of emphasis on people with the ability to create what they call images, where somebody can actually project themselves into a subconscious. There is people with loose locks, as they call them, which are able to almost hypnotize people without even touching them. It gets really into all that kind of stuff. Sharing peaks is a huge part of the story. It seems like anybody that is kind of... There's a guy named Hayashi who initially kind of brought Tsukasa up. He was able to kind of help Tsukasa by sharing his peak to him. And this becomes a huge part of the story, is this element of sharing peaks and how that can almost create a stronger bond than anything can ever create. Because you're essentially sharing the most precious thing that you have in your mind is your peak, and you're sharing that with somebody else, and it creates a very strong bond. Now, this is where the show is both... There's interesting elements to this, and there's very disappointing elements to this. The early episode, I was extremely confused. Second episode, I realized that this is a show that had a lot of possibilities. I was really curious how they can have almost like a game of cat and mouse in the subconscious of people, and how one person's warped perspective of a situation based off of hypnotism can create a narrative that would be almost, you know, I guess, clever and great storytelling that I would want to watch more of. And I think early on, Chris was talking about that he had kind of, he was seeing that it could possibly do something a little bit too much, and I was seeing more of, I was expecting high possibility of it doing crazy stuff with this stuff that would be almost mind-bending later on. And it never really did that. Well, the unfortunate thing is after those first two episodes, it really kind of just turns into this whole thing of the whole sharing the peak thing and how obsessive people become with those that share their peak. And with characters like Tsukasa, who is very manipulative and often plays or acts in a certain way in order to manipulate people, when he's breaking down over, you know, the person that shared his peak, I almost don't know if I'm supposed to believe the character on the screen or not. And it gets very melodramatic with how kind of whiny and very emotionally these characters get about that. At some point, I kind of realized that that was the whole thing with the story, and I had to kind of accept that as, oh, okay, this is serious. People who share their peak become extremely obsessive and bonded with those that shared their peak. And I did like that, but it seemed like it drug that out for pretty much a third of the entire middle segment of the story that I was kind of, okay, move on at some point. So I struggle with that. I thought it was a clever idea. It's very kind of more mature and grown up with its storytelling. I did like that. It felt very melodramatic at points, which I did struggle with. And it had a really cool concept that actually drove me to the very end of it. And then at the very end had like the most phenomenal last episode. So it's like confusing first episode, realizing how clever the writing is the second episode, melodrama about peaks, and then phenomenal last episode. So that's my takeaway. And then is like, this literally is the destination, not the journey. And that was my takeaway. And it sucks because it's one of those ones where I don't know if you'd get any of it if you just jump in the last episode to do that finale. So you kind of have to watch all the melodrama for that entire, I don't know, eight or so episodes in the middle there. But it is a clever show. I liked a lot of concepts in it. I love a little a game of cat and mouse here and there. It just had a little bit too much of its, you know, spinning its wheels with the whole, I need my peak, this person shared the peak, I love this person ran away from me, he shared this peak with him, he shared his peak with him, yada yada, that kind of stuff. So in the end, I thought it was worth it because I thought the ending was phenomenal. But it was kind of just bogged down by a lot of blah. So there you go. Pet, check that out if that sounds interesting to you. It took us a while to get it to, because I think that was a show that we have been talking about being coming from a long time ago. So to finally be able to watch it was good to put that finally to bed. Next one, Isekai Quartet. This is a short. This is Isekai Quartet 2, the second season. Streamed on Crunchyroll and Funimation for 12 episodes. They already have a third season announced. Studio was Studio Puyukai. The source is original, and the genres are comedy, parody, and fantasy. This is one of those ones where it just kind of feels weird to review it, but we're doing it anyways because it's not really short. It's like half episodes, so like 11 minutes or so. This one, of course, takes place in a school that is an isekai from isekai. So the whole joke is that all these shows that we have that have isekai in that, where some person is transported to another world, well, in these other worlds, they pressed a button, and that button warped them to another isekai, which is at a school. And so now you have people from Konosuba, ReZero, Saga of Tani the Evil, Shield Hero, Overlord, they're all at this. And then you also had a cameo from a certain other show.
Yep.
all kind of show up at one location, and they're forced to do normal school stuff. Most of them don't even know what the heck that is. Some of them that have been isekai'd from our world know what that stuff is. And there's kind of an unknown power that is kind of driving them to have to do that. So thus begins the shenanigans of having a bunch of isekai people in one location at once. Thoughts?
Yeah, for this one, I did love it. It was a lot of the goofy fun that we had last season. We got it this season. It was a little bit more like they're losing their steam a little bit, but they still had a lot of goofy points. A few laugh out louds here and there, but just general goofy fun.
Yeah, I think that was the thing with the first season, is that the first few episodes of the first season were just absolutely hilarious because you had a lot of the characters that were just thrown in there, and they're all kind of still combating with the fact that they were new to that location. So you had Aqua trying to turn undead on Momonga. You had a lot of kind of power levels showing off to each other kind of thing. And so you're really kind of interested to see how these people would interact. Having that moment where, you know, Tanya sits down with Momonga and talks to each other. Having the whole scene where, you know, Subaru and Kazuma, and Momonga kind of realize that they're, you know, in a similar situation. That was a lot of the fun in the first season. The second season, yeah, I do agree, it does feel like it kind of loses a lot of its steam. Did have a lot of really funny moments. I think at least one funny moment for each episode, but there is a sense that it has the characters kind of coming to grips and just kind of settling down. And that kind of removes a lot of that angstiness of why they're there and the comedy that creates.
And to top it off, they did not capitalize on the new characters that they brought in at all.
Yeah.
They did not. I mean, yeah, there was a joke here and there at the beginning and maybe towards the end. But
yeah, Naofumi and Reptilia and Philo kind of show up, and it was just kind of a, I don't want to have anything to do with this. He walks away and it's like, well, you added nothing to the show.
He was in a whole separate class.
You had the same thing with Seiya coming in, and he's just like, nope, don't want to have anything to do with this, and walks away. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much what Naofumi did. So the overcautious hero.
That's who it was. I was trying to remember who the other one was. I knew there was another one that had a cameo, but I couldn't remember which one.
Yeah, he just kind of walks up and says, yeah, nothing to do. Which would have been hilarious because we joked about the idea of, like, Aqua being...
His I don't want to get involved in this was a lot better than Naofumi's. I mean, his was... it was... Too much of a risk.
That's what it was. That's his whole stick is the overcautious hero. So he's like, yeah, don't want to risk anything walking away, which makes sense because literally the school's filled with, you know, an overlord and Cutus and a goddess, and it's nothing about that school is safe. So it makes sense. Yeah. Like I said, I just feel it kind of has lost a lot of its steam. It does feel a little more like the characters are becoming more kind of bonded to each other, which does kind of lead to less bumping of heads, so to speak, for the comedy. And so I think that's kind of where I'm rooting it at. Hopefully, season three, they'll kind of mix things up a little bit. So, still fun to watch, though. I still enjoy all my goofy characters. seen Union from Konosuba doing her little single person stage act, and Momonga's kind of the maids. Was the maids? I don't know what their names are, but the maids for Momonga is kind of sitting there going, "This is like a very lonely girl, isn't it?" She's up on the stage playing out every single.
She was a great. Thing. She was so great.
And then the crazy, weird version of Cinderella something. I don't know what they were doing on the stage anymore. Don't know what that was. Ram sitting there. I got the bucket of water and slipped and dropped it on you. Ram is just. She's so dorky.
Yeah, they were saying, yeah, she's going to clean up the house. No.
No,
that's not going to happen.
I'm not going to do what you say. All right, Room Camp or Heya Camp. This one is on Crunchyroll. Ran for 12 episodes. Very short. I think they were like 2 minutes each. Of course, this is just kind of, I guess, a gap between them releasing Eurocamp Season 2 here soon. Or they have announced it, but they'll be releasing here soon. This one streamed on Crunchyroll again. Studio is C Station. The source is a manga, and the genres are comedy and slice of life. And this one, of course, it doesn't know. It just basically follows Nadeshiko and a couple of friends of a camp, a school club for camping. and they kind of go out and go to different locations and just camp out and have fun. And this particular short, essentially, is just a very quick kind of a stamp rally, so to speak. So Nadeshiko and seems like, as always, Rin's not involved, but Nadeshiko and Aoi and Chiaki go on a stamp rally. And so they go to different locations and get little stamps for Nadeshiko's little card thing. And then eventually have a little reveal to what the whole stamp rally was for. And then a cute little kind of conclusion to it. It's very simple, very, as usual, laid back. I didn't find it as compelling as the original laid back camp. Laid back camp was great for just being, I guess the big problem is that it really is a 2 minute quick sight, a sightseeing of a certain location, because with the original laid camp, it was a laid back camp. It was all about, you turn it on and by minute number five, you're sitting there relaxing and enjoying a view with the characters. With this one, it's just pop on, here's a sight, pop off. So I don't really find any value to it, but it, like I said,
apparently you can't make an Iyashike in 2 minutes.
You cannot make an Iyashike. So yeah, it is almost like they're just saying, you want some characters, here's the characters for a little bit longer. We have a season two coming. It's almost like literally an apologies for the wait for season two. So if you're a big fan of like that camp, you're going to watch it. So it's fine for that. If you watch season one, just watch it for 23 minutes and you'll have it watched and then move on to season two.
But yeah, the only real problem for me was that it wasn't particularly my favorite characters. I more like Rin, and so
the one that's never really, there.
Yeah, the one that wasn't. I mean, it was sweet and fun, and their little finalized story was sweet. I enjoyed that. But yeah, it wasn't. I just was cool. Let's keep doing our thing, and that was fun.
Yep, and they get to hear the outro song where she says that she wants to shower in the sunshine.
They want to shower in the sunshine.
I would shower in the sunshine. Plunderer, this is kind of a mid-season review because we are still at the first core of it, and we will still have a second core to go through if Andrew has time to watch anything with all these shows that are coming up right now. But we decided to keep watching it anyways. I have no clue why. This is almost like a cross-age type show, so we'll see what comes of this mid-season review. This streams on Funimation and Hulu, running for 24 episodes. We're on, like, I don't know, 12 or something. I don't know what is that. Done by Studio Geek Toys. The source is a manga. The genres are action, ecchi, fantasy, shonen, even though there's literally very, not much ecchi at all on the show. It seems like they're purposely censoring it for the Blu-ray. I don't know what they're doing. There is some obvious covering up stuff that's happening, so I'm sure that there will be a reveal all Blu-ray later on, which is kind of, I don't know, false advertising a little bit. Anyways, this takes place in a world, they call it the 305th Alcyon calendar year. Essentially, it's almost like, you know, medieval times type setting. There are these aces from back in the day, like 300, 400 years ago, something like that. There was this big, huge war that happened where these turtles and these dragons were fighting each other, and then these aces showed up, and the aces were, like, extremely powerful, and they destroyed everything and saved the world kind of thing. Jump forward hundreds of years, and we start following a girl named Hina, who just before her mother was essentially being pulled away into the abyss, she gave her a voucher, which contains these numbers on it.
A ballot.
And everybody has, on some part of their body, a number. And this number is dictated based on you fulfilling some type of thing that you yourself is assigned. There's a girl named Nana, and she, every time that somebody says that her cooking is good, she gets a number. And if somebody, I guess, says that their cooking's bad, she'll lose a number. This main guy, Lix, his whole thing is that when girls turn him down, he loses a number. So he's always being turned down, obviously, because his number is very, very low. So yeah, everybody has his number, and it's based on that. A girl named Hina, who is the main character, essentially, well, sort of, her whole thing is that she has to walk a distance, and she gets a number. So anyways, Hina, after her mother got dragged away and she got this ballot from her, is trying to find this guy named, this ace named Licto. There you go. Licto sounds better. Licto, who is this ace, this legendary ace. She's trying to find that person because her mother told her to go find them.
Or call him Pudding.
And yeah, Pudding is better. Pudding's on. Yeah. I liked Lynn. Lynn was fun. But anyways, she finally finds him, gets kind of tricked by some evil commander guy. You kind of find out the military of this world's kind of jerks.
And saying it lightly.
They kind of lay out a lot of the whole number system early on in the show. It seems like they cover the whole fact that if somebody has a lower number than you, they have to obey a command. And if your number reaches zero, you get pulled into the abyss by these dark, shadowy hands. A lot of things, the number system, how it works, how you gain it, how you lose it, all that's kind of covered in the first episode. And then, unfortunately, is completely discarded for the rest of the show. It seems like they hit on, like, on the third or so episode, they hit on the fact that the higher the number, the more power you have, and these people have crazy high numbers that are fighting each other, and then it becomes completely useless after that point. It's except to kind of have a character tragically die because they ran out and they got dragged under. Yeah, kind of thing. The focus goes into more the aces, and then eventually jumps a shark and has helicopters show up out of nowhere. But I don't know if I want to reveal that. I'll decide later if I want to decide that. But yeah, it's getting weird at this point. They're kind of going to a parallel world at this point, I think. And so we'll see where it goes from there. I guess it's not really a parallel world. It's a history. They got pulled back in the history of Lictosan. Yeah. I don't know. I joked about Crossange more in the, but I don't think it's really Crossange. I don't think you can ever kind of quantify something as Crossange, because Crossange was like a show that I literally didn't know if I hated it or loved it. This one, it has a lot of negatives going for it, but the only reason I like it is because I want to know what the hell the writer's doing. Like, I don't mean that negatively. I honestly want to know what this writer is going to do with this story, because it seems so off the wall, and it could do something really weird and cool, or it's going to make me go, oh, that's all you were doing. Okay, I guess, shrug.
I agree. There is an aspect to this that it was kind of cool. And then when you got to the middle, it was like, yeah, I can go with this. This is an interesting world that they're building here. And then as Andrew was kind of saying, that point where they kind of jumped the shark, it was like, wait, that was from left field. Where are you even going with this? Now, I'm not going to say it was bad. It was just so left field. I wasn't really expecting it. And I like it. It was a cool idea. But that wasn't where my brain was going when I was expecting. Because they have this, let's say, a pit to abyss. Let's just say that. Well, they call it the abyss. But and you kind of, your mind starts going in one direction as to what that is. And then for it to kind of go completely left field, it was like, wait, whoa, 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 where are you going here? So I am absolutely fascinated. And I agree with Andrew. I really want to see where they go with this. Now it's just flat out, just pure intrigue. I want to know. That's going to drive me at least through a good portion until they do the big reveal, which I think it was what we're getting right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating show.
My theory, and again, I'll decide if I want to leave this in or not. My theory is that it's an isekai show that starts in the middle.
That's kind of where I'm leaning.
Yeah.
Isekai
with superpowers and
are destroying everything. See, I'm thinking that this is kind of a purgatory. They're in a purgatory of some sort, and how they got dragged into the purgatory is where I'm kind of wondering what's going on. And that's really kind of where I'm leaning. But yeah, effectively isekai from the middle of the story.
My biggest frustrations have to be in the fact that it seems like it does a episode of goofiness, episode of seriousness, episode of goofiness, episode of seriousness. And it seems like it keeps pretty on point with that. Every other episode is going to be goofy. And the frustration that I have with the goofy episodes is that most of the time it's trying to be really extremely hyper, Genki, pervy. And like I said earlier, it's like nothing's showing. And it's just constantly like Dasan being like way super hyper creepy. And that kind of does suck. But I really did like Lin. I loved Jay. Jay was probably one of the most surprising characters when he showed up. So yeah, we'll see if it turns into anything interesting. But like I said, I am really curious. It is funny that Hina has basically been, I think Hina as along Hina with the numbers has become so obsolete so quickly. It's not even funny.
She is the most, she had the most potential at the beginning of the show and just to be dropped off. Like,
yeah, Lin became her own character real quickly. And now Nana's going to be the main heroine because you get to see that she's probably more part of Lick than we originally knew. So we'll see. I think my biggest frustration, though, is going to be in the fact that I the original draw was the number thing. And unless they bring it back somehow here soon, it feels like they completely disregarded that whole thing from like episode 3. It became completely irrelevant. Not that they made it not an issue, just more the fact that it took nobody ever cares about it anymore. Like I said, besides one character, they used it for kind of a tragedy. But yeah, that's Plunderer. We'll keep watching it, and we'll let you know if it cross changes or becomes a Shōgun Roku Raku Shinju classic show you must watch. Moving on, we have our last show for the summer or winter 2020 anime season reviews. So if you have not heard your show yet, I'm sorry. We're not reviewing it this season. But our last one is My Hero Academia Season 4. And like we mentioned in our last review podcast, we're at this point now where it seems kind of pointless to do a review anymore. Kind of saying generally if we like it or not, because we like it. Because we're watching 4 seasons of it, 88 episodes of it. Obviously, we like it. So at this point, we're just going to do full-on spoiler discussion of the actual season. So if you have not watched the show and you don't want to be spoiled anything, just know that we enjoy it because we watched 88 episodes of it and we'll watch season 5 of it. So, but you've been warned at this point that we'll be talking full-on spoilers for My Hero Academia season 5. So we had overall basically confront the League of Villains, offer to let them join under his wing. One person lost arm, one person got completely splattered. Then we got into Eddie, who is this girl that Overhaul is taking care of. They're creating essentially bullets that can take away people's ability to have quirks, takes away their quirk ability, and they eventually go to rescue Eri. Lots of fighting happens. Night Eye, unfortunately, taking a step out of the off the stage. Tagata losing his abilities, and then we have a big, huge culture festival. Meet the best pairing ever, which is Gentle Villain and La Brava and Gentle. And then we have Endeavor. Oh, we also had the people retaking the test for their hero license, which was Bakugo and Shota and Shoto. And then, yeah. And then finally, yeah.
Oh my gosh, so much has happened.
I was trying to recap it so I can remember all the stuff that we did. So, yeah. So this is like right after, I guess the first thing to hit on is this is right after All Might has essentially passed the baton. He has turned, he had a big fight with All For One and beat him and then said, it's your guys' turn, I can't do this anymore. He's basically, his body's given out. Even though he constantly turns into All Might still, he's essentially done. So the big fear is going on is that they've lost their number one hero and everybody's lost their big beacon of hope. I think that was one of the yeah. Honestly, besides, yeah, them going down and fighting Overhaul, losing Night Eye, learning about the truth about Togata, the one thing I didn't enjoy about this entire season was that element of them realizing they lost their number one. They kind of took a back seat to it for a while, but then they kind of came back with it with Endeavor talking to All Might and kind of saying, what does it take to be a hero? And trying to really want to fit in that role as replacing All Might. And I think this last episode definitely put an icing on that cake. So
he did a phenomenal job with that. I was so just sucked into that moment. I teared up here and there just watching him just push and damn push
music.
And push.
That damn music.
they did a phenomenal job with that. And I was even ambivalent of it at the beginning of it, but they sold it over and over and over again. Even to the point where they even took the time to go, yeah, we hate him for these reasons, and just put it right in front of your face. And then you're sitting here looking at the contrast of him pushing all the way through that moment. And it was just, if ever I had any negative feelings towards Endeavor, I actually think they pulled off kind of cutting those out. They did a wonderful job of that this episode.
He wanted to be a better person, so he's like offering a handshake to that kid. He's like, you're different. This is not how you're supposed to be. Like his only fan in the crowd, and he scares the crap out of the kid because he wants to give him a handshake. Yeah. No, it's funny because doing that entire thing with Overhaul, I was really dreading that they were going to lose somebody. Like, I was pretty convinced Togata was going to die. I thought that was going to be, because the big thing they were hitting on before then was Togata was who Night Eye said that he wanted All Might to give his power to. Togata was going to be All Might's replacement. And Togata had the ability to kind of go into objects and stuff. And he was really good at it. It was kind of cool how they kind of pushed really early about how skillful he was at using this ability because of all the drawbacks to his ability, but still being able to use it to fight. And so they were really pushing this idea that Deku wasn't supposed to be the one to get this. And when they went down there to fight Overhaul, I was like, there's so much emphasis on the fact that they picked the wrong person. It's either going to turn to a big thing about Deku proving that he was the one that should get it, is the one that rightfully got it, or they're going to have Tagata die that way Night Eye realized that Deku's the only option kind of thing. I wasn't really sure exactly how they were going to go about that. And so, yeah, I wasn't really expecting Night Eye to bite the dust, but which is funny because I think at this point when we got to that episode, I'm like, they don't kill anybody. So it was like, okay, finally after 78 or so episodes, we finally have our first death. So,
well, I almost thought that they had actually killed off Endeavor for a second. I was like, because they've actually,
yeah, to give people a little behind baseball or inside baseball, is I told Chris today, I'm like, there's two shows technically, Sekai Quartet 2, but we have to watch the last episode of My Hero Academia before we do the recording. And one of the reasons why I was doing that is because I was convinced they were going to kill off Endeavor. I literally thought that this episode was going to have Endeavor die too.
Well, they've already shown their hand. They are willing to do it, and they've done major characters. Night Eye is not he's a major character, but I'm not going to say he's a minor character either.
He was the old guard.
Yeah, he's effectively...
He was All Might's partner.
So he does have a significance, and having him get knocked out as a character was actually a moment. And Endeavor is in that same category of not a major character, but he's not exactly a minor character either. He's somebody who's in the background, like Ender said, the old guard. So you kind of want them to hang around at least for a little bit longer while these kids get into their own. So, there is that danger there, and they're actually playing on that danger, and they're pulling it off big time.
It's surprising to see out of nowhere. It's like they have this whole ceremony to show off who's going to be the next number one, and they're going through all these characters, and I'm like, I literally only recognize two of them on that stage. Who the hell are these new people they just pull out of nowhere?
No, and
Hawk
and
was pretty cool, though.
And the Hawk awesome. Is cool, and he has an overpowered power.
He is way overpowered. It was funny because he's like, literally, he just doesn't want to do it because he doesn't want to be in the front. He's just like, I want to be back here. You be at the front of the stage kind of thing.
And that was the way he was saying it was actually kind of respectful. I did like the way that they did that with him.
I was going to Google search to what that group was, but I'm afraid I'm going to bring up a spoiler or something. It was a funny little ceremony because it gets to Endeavor and he's like, just watch me. Hawk starts making fun of him because he had like this whole huge discussion or this whole big speech that Hawk did. And then he hands it over to Endeavor. Endeavor's like, just watch me. And he's like, really? That's it? I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, it was, I'm very mixed on the whole school festival thing. I thought, after coming off, and I guess it technically they needed a cool off period, but I think of the entire show, nothing's ever felt like filler. That kind of felt like filler. Again, I acknowledge the fact that it almost felt like they needed a cool down after fighting an overhaul. They just got off this big, huge, freaking epic fight. They had to kind of let everybody take a moment to breathe, get over, you know, the loss of Night Eye. Show that Tagata's still wanting to move forward, but it was a...
And we had to get the Lolly battery pack in the school as well.
Yeah, they had to recuperate. They had to, I guess, fix how isolated Eri was always.
She was so wonderful. I loved them. That to me was absolutely the payoff. That absolutely brought out some actual solid tears. It wasn't tearing up. I actually got a tear or two.
See, that it was solid too. Phenomenal. It was made of crystal.
Huh?
It was solid too. It came out of crystal. No, this is the frustrating thing about how long it's been, because technically this was like, what, I don't know, November, since we watched some of these episodes. Indro and what was his name? Gumdrop? What was the name of the big guy?
Gum Gum? No, Fat Gum. He's right there.
Fat Gum. Yeah, Fat Gum. I have him on here. Red Riot and Fat Gum fighting that one guy.
That was phenomenal.
Was a pretty epic fight, too.
That is one thing.
Sunny Deer's fight was good too.
I kind of implied it. I don't know if I said it during the mid season or what. I know I mentioned it. Maybe I just mentioned it to you, but one of the things that absolutely My Hero Academia does in spades is hype up a fight. Even if you're not even into the fight, they will somehow drag the hype out of that fight, and it just becomes like the coolest fight ever, and they pull it off every time.
Yeah. Had some good moments of Himiko. That was great. Don't really get much of Himiko, and suddenly, and she was vicious too. She like stabbed that dude in the back. What else?
I liked Pinky. Pinky came out of nowhere. I liked that.
Pinky the breakdancer?
Yeah, she was.
Or
like,
seeing that Red Riot and Pinky had a little history together.
Yeah, it was like, okay, this
I was
is
shipping
like,
it. I was shipping it. I was shipping that one. What do you think that they were implying with that very last clip? Is it him connecting with one of the previous holders of the?
I'm assuming it's the first, but I don't know.
One for all.
Yeah, that's.
So he said something like, "You're the seventh, or what was it, seventh or eighth? Or ninth?
Ninth.
Yeah.
That's something that I almost kind of want to go back and watch it a couple more times because that was such a weird thing there.
Well, the thing that was kind of telling was that it's showing All for One basically grabbing this guy who says that you'd assume is the first. Well, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean that he has to be the first. He could have been like the sixth or something. But showing that technically All for One would have been pretty old, I guess. I don't know. I guess insinuating that he's pretty old. Unless he passed it on, he looks exactly the same as him. Because his current self, he doesn't have a face. But he looked like he had the same kind of chin structure and everything. So I'm assuming that's the same All for One.
Yeah, I believe that All Might mentioned something about him being one of them at some point.
Let's talk about La Brava and Gentle Criminal. I literally, when they first popped up, and this was like on the cusp of the whole, school festival thing where I'm going, oh, is this going to be like a filler? Is this literally the first time they're going to do filler? It doesn't feel like there's really anything happening too extravagant. And then they popped up. I'm like, this is literally going to be filler, isn't it? And I love them. I adored them. I literally was like, oh, these are going to be like a cringe group that's going to pop up out of nowhere and do nothing, get beat up, and then they're going to go, you know, Team Rocket blasting off again off the sunset. But no, I actually really like them. I really like the personality, and I think that's partly to do because of La Brava's Seiyu. But I think Gentle Criminal himself ended up growing on me after a while. But like I said, it felt like it was going to be a throwaway grouping, but I ended up really, really liking them. And then they had a really cute little...
I really do hope that they...
Explaining what La Brava did and joining him. And
I really hope that they become some kind of intermix in the story. I don't want them to be just kind of that throwaway, you know, the bad guy, and then we never see him again.
I'm assuming at some point they're going to be doing something, and out of nowhere, La Brava's voice is going to pop into Deku's radio on his ear saying, don't worry, I'm getting this door open, or something like that. And he's like, La Brava? And he's like, yeah, I'm working here with Gentle Criminal. Because they kind of offered her a job because they knew that she was like really skilled hacker. They were offering her a job, so.
Did they? I missed that.
And she's like, no, I can't do anything without Gentle, so. Yeah. I think that's going to happen. He's going to pop into his ear at some point, so. We'll see. But yes, Lolly Batteries. I guess we should talk about the Lolly Battery. We hinted at it when we were talking.
I've hinted at it several times.
Our first impressions of the last core.
Totally made that joke, and it just stuck.
But we never really explained what the Lolly Battery is. So Eri's able to restore things back to a previous state. And so being like strapped to the back of Deku...
Who actually destroys himself uses his power.
Yeah, he destroyed himself initially, and she restored him. And then he's like, okay, just keep doing that. And then he just goes complete. It's like technically the first time we've ever been able to see Deku be at the level of All Might. because whenever Deku tries to be at the level of Dull Might, he destroys his entire body. So he was able to go pretty much all out, and it was pretty dang epic. And, that, and like I said, it's one of those things where it's like, it sucks that the whole idea behind Deku inheriting this power has always been to the point of you'll never see him ever reach his potential because he always has this barrier. And every time he needs to push himself, he breaks himself and has to recover. And I think at some point they even mentioned the kissing restoring lady mentioned the idea of like at some point you're not going to be recoverable. Like you have to stop doing this. So they found a way to get around that and they just threw Arion on his back. So now, and it was, and I think they mentioned at some point that it is almost as if they kind of replaced the old lady. Now they have another healer in the group, and whenever somebody has something bad, which was funny because I think at some point when they really kind of got into what Eri can do, I literally thought, I'm waiting for the fake out to happen. I'm waiting for Overhaul to, I don't know, slap one of the main characters, splatter them, and then everybody freak out for an entire week because they just killed off Bakugo or something like that. And then the next week, Eri walks over and touches the blood and it comes back in.
I thought of the same thing.
Because that's what Overhaul technically did with several of his cronies. He touched them, they splattered, and then he reconstructed them into himself. And almost Eri is almost like the same thing, but she just restores it back to a previous state. So I almost felt like they were going to totally fake out somebody. I literally thought that she was going to save Night Eye, but
me too.
That was going to happen.
Night Eye and Togeta. I was like, okay, you have literally.
I think she's going to fix Togeta, no doubt.
Yeah,
that's been my theory, and I'm just surprised it's not happened yet. I think they're just more afraid of her losing control again because that is the big fear is that she doesn't know how to control it. She just went ballistic with Deku,
which is something that's technically going to happen at the school is she's going to learn how to control her powers and then eventually she'll bring Togeta back, I'm sure.
Or they'll kill Togeta. I don't know. I think if they were going to kill him, they would have done it already, but I totally thought that was, he was going to bite the dust.
Well, I was going to mention, and we kind of got sidetracked. I do like the entire thing between Night Eye and Deku and Togeta of the finally seeing what All Might seen in Deku and how he could finally see the idea of this is the future All Might and why All Might chose him. I thought that was a really kind of a wonderful little acknowledgement.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Oh man, freaking Tomura coming in for like that whenever somebody's down and out to come up and just kick them like five times while they're down and then walk away.
That was kind of brutal.
Yeah.
Sorry. Was kind of brutal.
So he had, now here's the funny thing, because he had Tomura destroyed one of his arms or one of his hands and his Tomura's lackey, who is the one that's able to put things into a marble, took his other hand. Now, technically, he could still get that hand back then, I guess. Maybe not. I don't know. I do know that they've put people, he put Bakugo in one of those marbles and then came and took it back.
I thought
to
he
lair.
Took the hand to give to the Nemus, so.
That is true. I didn't think about that. So yeah, we might have a Nemu later that has
Overhaul's
power.
Yep.
Wow. I didn't think about that. Because his power is from his hands. So at least that's what we believe. And so yeah, no, and it sucks because Overhaul has that same Seiyu. So it's like, oh man, it kind of sucks to have him kind of go down. But he was by the end of the first core, you were like, yeah. Don't feel bad at all about that Overhaul. After all the crap you put Eri to.
He knocked out both of the hands so that he couldn't heal himself, and he had knocked out his legs or something like that. It was brutal. It was really brutal.
I just seen him knock out his hands. Because that's where all of his powers are. So we believe. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No, we talked about the lolly battery. We talked about the gentle criminal. We talked about the fights surrounding Overhaul. That's pretty much as far as I can remember all, everything. And we even talked about Endeavor, which is a surprise.
You usually don't want to talk about Endeavor because he's a total jerk to his family.
He was a total jerk.
I do agree. It's funny because they did kind of have that... It was trying to kind of parallel his family life with his, or not really his family life, but his family's perspective of him at the same time that he's trying to become that replacement for All Might. So I do really like that.
I even thought that was really kind of cool what they did, why his entire, I never understood his drive for Todoroki at why he wanted the ice and fire so bad. He was a big thing for him.
They were talking about that way back in the tournament. That's what the idea was.
But they never actually gave it a reason. And this fight, yeah. This last fight,
it was to offset his heat.
Right. Right. But it sounded more like a fire and ice thing as a two different powers. But it didn't.
No.
In this last battle, it was actually quantified. I get too overheated. I need the ice to cool my body down. And that was really kind of cool. Having the quirk, going back to the quirks and their downsides, his is he gets too overheated. And that was kind of a cool thing to see that.
Well, what I'm saying is that was technically talked about when they were showing Todoroki finally accept the heat, was that was the whole reason why his dad was doing that, was because having too much of one side is a downside. Just technically with him, it was more on the ice side, realizing that was they offset each other. But yeah, it was technically shown from Endeavor's perspective with this last fight. So that makes sense. So yeah, still have the League of Villains, still have Himiko. And Endeavor is fighting Nemu. I like that we still have the same kind of villain ongoing. I almost feel, though, at the same time, they need to put the whole Nemu thing to sleep at this point. They've been doing Nemu since, what, that first training session that they had at that dome. And they just keep bringing back the Nemus, like, over and over again. And at this point, it's like, yeah, I technically see the whole concept of, you know, creating, you know, bioweapons with quirks, but find something new. We're 88 episodes in at this point, so we need to really find something new. We need to find a new bad guy. So my only kind of side desire, but still love all the characters, though. Still enjoying the show a lot. Definitely up there for my favorites of shonens. Anything else?
No.
All right. That's My Hero Academia Season 4 spoiler discussion. Hope you guys enjoyed that. And hope you guys enjoyed all these reviews. Again, we're at talkingspear.com. You can go find all of our anime, new and old, great community forum links, top social media links on the right side. And probably a thread for this particular podcast episode, so you can yell at me for not liking Izukun as much as you. But that's okay, because I have terrible taste and you don't. Anything else? We good?
No, we're good.
Time to move on to the spring season. You excited?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's already out there. We already have one episode of pretty much like 10 shows, so.
We watched one already. We cheated. Sorry.
Watched one?
Yeah. Oh, no, we didn't.
Okay. I was about to say, I must have
OVAs. We watched the OVAs.
Yeah, we watched some OVAs. For
We couldn't handle it.
Bookworm.
We had to. It was important.
Yep. Hope you guys enjoyed. Sorry if we didn't review the show that you wanted us to review. We'll probably get back to it eventually whenever we have time, which we never do. So I'm not going to promise nothing. We hope you guys enjoyed, and you all take care.
Oos.